One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hey everyone, today's episode is brought to you by Munchie Mug. Munchie Mug is the only spill-proof snack cup made with a stretchy fabric lid. You can shake it, throw it, drop it, and it won't spill. Munchie Mug, making life a little less messy. Hey everybody, welcome to this episode of Don't Make Me Come Back There. We are a funny podcast about family.
Mm-hmm.
My name is Dustin Nickerson. I am the host.
You are.
I'm here with Stephen English.
Hey.
Comedian, dog lover,
mm-hmm.
Dorothy lover.
Dog tolerator.
Dorothy. Dog tolerator.
Tolerator.
I may have heard you, before we started recording this, say to your wife, Dorothy, hit him. Which...
I was saying it facetiously.
Yeah.
Facetiously.
I had a weird thing today. So we're driving back today from Vegas, which we'll talk about in a second. And I'm in the middle lane, or not in the middle lane, I'm in the far left lane, but mm-hmm. It was like kind of traffic.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at my GPS and my eyes are there and kind of going back and forth the road. And on the passenger side where my wife's sitting, a motorcycle comes by and literally shoves our rear view mirror in and like yells at us.
Yeah.
Tells me to get off my phone.
Yeah.
Which I'm not on my phone. I mean, I'm looking at my GPS.
Right.
And then I kind of give him one of these hand gestures.
Oh, very vulgar. Yeah, That's very vulgar.
I did not. I gave him the Christian finger, which is the thumbs down. And no, I got to kind of do the arms out.
Yeah.
That's my general, you know, what are you doing? And he made some like get off your phone type thing.
Yeah.
And then he like did a gun motion into our van. So he's in front of us and he goes back and he does a little like gun. But I was like, okay, maybe this isn't like, he's like, oh, I'm going to shoot you up type thing. And I was thinking about it. I was like, okay, California motorcycle laws in general
are terrible. I hate that. I hate the lane splitting thing.
I don't know.
So crazy to me.
It's insane.
Yeah.
It is absolute insanity.
Like, who is the motorcycle lobby that's, like, behind that law? It's so dumb.
I'm all day just, whenever I'm in traffic, just fantasizing about opening my door. Just sending them head over heels.
It's nuts.
I can't believe that it's legal.
Yeah.
And so this guy does this, and I'm like, listen, even if I was texting, which I wasn't.
Right.
And I was in my lane.
You're in a lane.
I was in a lane.
Yeah.
I was in the middle of said lane.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, who did the more dangerous thing here? You touched my vehicle with your hand, and then when you got in front of us, you then looked back. Not in a mirror.
Yeah, yeah.
Not in your rear cam.
Yeah.
You physically
turned your entire body around. Was he at least wearing like, I don't get the thing that drives me crazy when I see someone on a motorcycle and they have just like a t-shirt and like cut off jeans. It's like, come on, man. Like,
yeah.
I don't care what the weather would be. Like, if I was forced to ride a motorcycle, I would be in three jackets on.
I'd be wrapped in a pair of
shoes. And a sweatshirt. Yeah. Yeah. I would have all sorts of chaps.
Yeah. Just a wetsuit. Just full astronaut gear.
Yeah.
You know what? Astronaut gear would be a good look.
It'd be a sweet look, actually. Yeah.
I've never gotten the appeal of motorcycles.
No.
I don't see it. They annoy me.
Dangerous.
Dangerous, and I'm not. Listen, like, if you do it, I'm just. I feel to me, I feel like motorcycles are just for motorcycle drivers. Like, they're just for each other. You know how I know that? Is when they drive by each other, they give each other that little wave.
Yeah. It's like Jeep Wrangler. It's like people who drive Jeep Wranglers. It's like, that's an inefficient kind of car. You bought a car that's not a whole car, but then they just do the little wave. Like,
just a little wave. Wrangler. Which, you know what the only equivalent that I do that is? When I'm driving on a scooter. If you see somebody else on a scooter in your car, you give them a what's up.
Hey, what's up?
Hey. Yeah, the rest of the city hates us.
Yeah. But we're in this
together. I guess that's my own hypocrisy. I don't know that that's any more or less dangerous, so... We have a really fun episode today with the great Mark Christopher Lawrence. Mark Christopher Lawrence is a comedian and an actor, an overall positive influence in my life. Mark is, I've known Mark since I started comedy. You can find Mark on Instagram at Mark Christopher, Mark Christopher Lawrence. And you can find him on Twitter at Mark C-H-R Lawrence, Mark Christopher Lawrence. Mark is, man, just a great guy, really funny guy, and just kind of like a grinder, show business guy who's been in so much, done so much, worked so hard, been in some of movies, your favorite movies, your favorite commercials.
Yeah, definitely.
Terminator 2, come on.
Yeah, forget about
Garfield,
it.
Garfield, let's go.
Forget about it. Tale of Two Kitties or the first one?
I think it was, I don't know. Some funny commercials. Yeah. And then his biggest role that he's most known for is his Big Mike in Chuck.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also a stand-up comedian and has a special out on Dry Bar Comedy right now. And you can check out all his stuff at his website. Mark was around in the scene, established headliner in town here when I was an open micer, was one of the first guys to bring me out on the road. We've since worked together on the road quite a bit. We had one time recently where the roles were reversed, where I had a gig I was headlining, and I asked him if he would willing to come open with me, and I put him up in the hotel. Worst person I've ever shared a room with in history. You know what? If you're going to snore like that, bring the sleep apnea machine.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on.
Pay the extra 25 for the extra pack.
It's one thing that when somebody's snoring in the room with you, it's quite another when you paid for the room. You know what I mean?
Yeah, if you were the guest, you'd be like, well, I got to suck this up.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. If I'm the guy he brought along. So we have a really fun chat with Mark about his life growing up in Compton, his relationship with his mom. His daddy wasn't around, siblings, just childhood, how he got into acting, all that kind of stuff. So I hope you guys enjoy the episode. This will be our first episode since Thanksgiving has been released. How was your holiday? Was it good?
Good. Went to my sister-in-law's house on Thursday. I would say 45 Vietnamese people there, and then my mom and dad, and we had a great time, had a really fun time. Then we had second Thanksgiving yesterday at my mom's house because she can't not also cook. She was like, oh yeah, you know, we should go on Thursday. And then the minute she left, she was like, you're coming to my house on Thursday and I'm cooking.
And it'll be better.
Yeah. She has to cook.
It was real competitive at that point. Yeah. That's great though. But overall positive.
Fun.
Any drama?
We played Flip Cup afterwards.
Oh,
which is a family tradition, a Tran family tradition. Mm-hmm. After Thanksgiving, I was one of the captains. Dorothy was the other team captain.
I don't know Flip Cup.
Flip Cup is where you
is
line
this
up.
A drinking game.
It's a drinking game.
Oh, you
line up
you
bars. You line up the cups. You put just a little bit of beer in there. You drink. You put one down, and you have to put it underneath. You have to flip it so it lands on the mouth.
Now this. This was invented by the pilgrims?
Yes, that's... It's...
You know, it's funny, as I come at you with any amount of judgment after spending my Thanksgiving...
You're in Las Vegas. Tell me again about the slot machine you played to honor our forefathers.
I did not gamble. So did you guys win, or...?
Yeah, well, we won, and I picked the team, and I picked just a all-star team.
Yeah.
And we were just... I mean, it got really serious there for a second. It got pretty competitive.
You guys do picking of teams and stuff. Is
drafting,
that just random?
Yeah.
You do a draft
every year. A new couple is the.
All right, this is too much.
It's the thing, yeah. But anyways, long story that's going to get cut.
No, great. It's not. Keep that in. Absolutely.
Great. Great. Great Thanksgiving. Competitive drinking games. And then second Thanksgiving, 4 days later.
Yeah. Again, I am in no place of judgment. I spent my week in Las Vegas, Nevada, because I was working Brad Garrett's Comedy Club in the basement of MGM, which Brad himself says in the announcements making fun of it. This was my first week when Brad wasn't there. If you guys don't know Brad, Brad was Robert from Everybody Loves Raymond, the brother, and a bunch of other funny stuff. He's on Single Parents right now. I'm promoting as if he's on this podcast right now. One day, future. Yeah, yeah, he's got that crazy low. He was Eeyore in Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah.
That's in the most recent one. We had a good time out there. We got back today from the trip. And you know what my least favorite part of the trip is, buddy?
What is it?
When you get home. You got to unpack. And you got a big mess to clean up.
Yeah.
Driving with three kids.
Yeah.
But it wasn't so bad today.
Why is that?
You know why?
Why?
Because our munchie mug. Hey, everybody, don't make me come back there as a sponsor.
Welcome to our first ad.
Munchie mug. Okay, so this is true. We have a munchie mug in our house.
Yeah.
And my daughter, when she picks it up, she runs around the house and she goes, munchie mug. So I don't know if that's on their website, but it needs to be soon. That's just bonus what we're throwing in. We're writing your theme song.
Theme song, yeah. Jingles.
Okay, so the munchie mug is actually a legitimate, amazing product. It's a spill-proof snack cup, but it's like, I don't know how much you know. This is my world, but most of those things have like hard these plastic. Hard, jagged plastic edges. This one is like soft, stretchy fabric, so it doesn't hurt kids' hands. It's made in America. You're not going to spill it. We tried very hard. I both intentionally tried very hard to break it and spill it, and my daughter unintentionally. It is top rack, dishwasher safe. It's a good sensory experience for the kids. It's large enough to fully open their hands in there. BPA free. Comes in 10 different colors and 2 different sizes, 12 ounce and 16 ounce. And two good things on listening to this podcast, you get free shipping every day. And if you go to munchiemug.com and type in a promo code, don't make me, you're going to get 25% off. So already getting free shipping.
There you go.
And go to munchiemug.com and type in don't make me to get a 25% off your order.
That's munchiemug.com.
And when you get home from Vegas on your road trip, you're going to have to clean up a lot less. And now you don't have to spend as much money on a vacuum.
Yep.
I mean, the munchie mug is, you're going to be able to buy a house because of munchie mug. You're going to be able to save so much. You know what? One of your kids, honestly, this is your kid's college savings.
You're going to retire to Boca next month.
Vegas is funny because like Vegas doesn't change and... People judge us a lot for going to Vegas, you know, some of my more conservative friends.
Yeah.
And I've told you this before, but I have friends in my life who both think I am the most religious freak that they know.
Yes, like me.
And then I have other religious friends in my life who think I'm not saved. No. So I'm right in the middle.
You're right there. That's good.
So the people who think I'm not saved or that God has turned his heart against me is they see a week in Vegas over Thanksgiving, you know, and just all kinds of judgment. But there's plenty of fun things to do with the kids in Vegas.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We had a good time. And this was the pitch. This was the conversation with my wife. I go, hey, the comedy club offered me a week over Thanksgiving. Do you want to go? And she said, are you asking me if I want to get a comped hotel in a city where there's a lot to do for a week and not have to cook Thanksgiving dinner?
Right.
Where we're in, you know, how much do we pay them?
Yeah.
Those shows were fun. And I'm always thankful to be able to go out there. And we, I don't know, the Vegas thing, though, is the walking.
Sure.
Guess how much we averaged a day walking?
6.8.
5 miles.
Oh, well, okay. I would have done 6.8.
Well, you would have had more calories to work off because of your aggressive drinking games.
Also,
because
I get lost very easily. I'm always lost. So
you're,
I think,
just
that
circling
done
the line in front of MGM, just climbing it.
MGM.
How did he end up on top of the Statue of Liberty? All right, folks, enjoy this episode with Mark Christopher Lawrence. Thank you so much for tuning in.
Yeah.
If you have not already, please rate and like and subscribe and leave comments and all those things. And shoot us emails at don'tmakemecomebackthere@gmail.com with people that you would like to have on the episodes, or, you know, within reason.
Yeah.
People are like, hey, you should
What's Gaffigan doing?
Yeah, you should get on George Clooney. George Clooney, because he has a... You should talk to Angelina Jolie about adoption. Yeah. Like, you know what? Give us a minute. Give us a minute. We'll interview some people that have been in the room with Angelina Jolie, and then we'll make our way up. Somebody mentioned Brian Regan, and I'm like, I can get Dennis. Dennis is my friend. I'm friends with the brother. So look for an upcoming episode with Dennis Regan.
Dennis Regan.
All right, we love you guys. Thank you so much.
See you guys.
Thanks for walking from your house. Did you walk?
No, I leaned into some old man stuff this past couple of weeks.
I'm sorry, you got to expand on that idea.
So,
you leaned into some old man
trash at a friend's house, and I was stepping down from their den to their garage, and in my head, it was a step from the den threshold to the garage floor, but apparently somebody put a step in between. Because they couldn't raise their foot a foot and a half, and I hit that step and rolled my ankle and ended up on the concrete floor.
What time of day is this?
Middle of the day, pinched my sciatic nerve.
Oh goodness!
And apparently there's some nerve damage in my ankle, so my foot, I now have a drop foot. Which is actually a thing.
What's a drop foot?
When I walk, my foot does whatever it wants to do. It's like I'm walking straight, and it goes off to the side.
It just has a mind of its own.
Like, hey, somebody following us?
Yo, we need to turn right.
I'm like, hey, we going this way. But I thought somebody was following us. So it's been that.
Oh, man. That is some old man stuff. You got to watch out for them curbs.
I was so glad I didn't break my hip because, you know, because my closest friends are very brutal.
Oh, they'll just be mean.
I would have had walkers sent to me. The whole nine.
Yeah, that's...
Depends.
Do you feel like that's a difference between a guys and girls, too? Like, I don't think girls would do that.
No.
Girls, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry.
Let me help you, Susie.
They'd start a Kickstarter.
No.
They'd send you nice things. No. They'd set a meal plan. Everybody, we need to cook them meals. Like, you think they had a baby or something.
Right.
Guys like, you're old hip.
I would have got like one of those things that you put over the toilet for old people.
Yeah.
It would have been one of those. Yeah, just all kinds of old people stuff I would have got. So I'm just so glad. Brutal. I'm just grateful I didn't bust my hip.
Guy friends never, our relationships never really evolve from grade school.
Yeah.
They're always, whatever they were like in grade school, even if you make a new friend after grade school, it's still like, hey, we'll go to class together. Maybe we'll go to work together. We'll have a professional relationship. But then we'll clown and hate and make fun of anytime we can. Anytime we can. And if somebody like invites it, then it's just, and I don't know. I'm not proud of it. But I grew up making fun of my friends.
Right.
That's how I made friends was, you know, we could laugh together. And it was almost like a compliment to get made fun of.
Right. Well, we always tell people, look, if you got thin skin, you don't want to be in. Because this is going to be painful.
Right.
For you.
Well, I always tell people, you know, I've shared a lot on this podcast about where I'm from. And I, you know, and let people know I grew up in a pretty rough neighborhood. But I feel like we have a guest today that will raise me.
Raise the bar. Raise the roughness. Bar.
Like, hey, I grew up in South Seattle by the airport, Federal Way. It's kind of rough. And then this guy rolls in straight out of
Compton.
Straight out of Compton. Before it was a thing.
Well, here's the thing, was that when we moved to Compton, we were the second black family on our street.
So what year was this?
1969.
1969, you moved to Compton. How old are you at the time?
I don't know, man. Don't make me do math.
Okay. But you're grade school?
I was probably kindergarten.
Okay. This is you and your mom?
1970. I was getting me, my mom, my sister, my brother.
Okay. Where's dad?
At one of his other three families.
Yeah. you guys were the third of three? You were the newest family?
No, I think we were two.
Oh, okay.
We're two.
So he bounced around. Well, was he ever involved?
Papa was a Rolling Stone.
Yeah.
Well, you know, he would come around and but 1974 my mother was like, "You know what? Go do you. I got this."
Isn't that crazy that you get to a point where like you're not helping. Just stop. If anything, you're hurting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, he would call and say, "Hey, Pop." He used to call me Pop. He said, as soon as the weather clears up, we're gonna do some fishing. And it got to be a joke to me. It just got to be funny because it's like I remember being in high school, my friend Cedric was there.
You lived in L.A. The weather was always clear.
And I said, Cedric, I said, watch, he say, as soon as the weather clears up, it's 80, it's 82 oh, out.
Man.
As soon as the weather clears up, we're going to do some fishing. Oh, and Cedric just fell out laughing.
And your grade school friends will do that. Like, yeah. Man, your dad sucks. Like, yeah. Dang, man.
And then I had to come back with, you don't have a daddy.
Yeah.
Your daddy is your uncle.
So you're kindergarten, you guys moved to Compton, you're the second black family. Is mom, how's your mom, is your mom doing okay financially, or you
well
guys...
She's working at McDonnell Douglas, so I mean we're doing like I think she's making like $1.75 an hour as an electrician at McDonnell Douglas.
Okay, so she's
so struggling.
Yeah,
you know, but putting food on the table, keeping clothes, roof over our head, clothes on our back, you know, the necessities.
Yeah, you don't. Do you feel poor? Like, are you guys?
No, I mean, you kid, you don't know you're poor. You know, we ate good every day. My mother was fantastic. Is a fantastic cook.
Yeah.
So no, didn't feel poor. I think it wasn't until high school where I realized, you know, oh, we can't afford Nikes.
Yeah, the name brand thing will start getting you.
Yeah, and then I got a job.
I'll buy my own Nikes.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mom. So you watch the neighborhood just gradually change.
Yeah, the way I describe it is like, you know, being like a frog in a pot of water on a stove, and you turn the heat up and it gets hotter, but you don't move because that's just the way things are around here. So I was in the environment as it shifted. But you have to realize that when we moved there, there was a lot of negativity because we were black in this white neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And then by 1974, all the white families
just
had moved out.
Full
except
white
one.
Flight.
Yeah, full white flight.
But the one stuck around.
Yeah.
Was it because they were poor or
no,
they weren't racist?
No, they had the best. What weren't racist?
That's
in
good.
Fact, in fact, he said to me, his wife passed, and then he said to me he was going to stay there until I graduated high school. He says, and then he's
you specifically.
Yeah, that's what he said. We were having a conversation. I used to talk to him all the time, and because I would cut across his grass to catch the bus when I was late, and sometimes I'd hide at his bush.
Is that or miss
school? Bus was already there. So, well, I'd make it to school, but I'd have to walk, and I'd just be late.
Yeah. So let's see. If you moved there, you said in 1969, and so you're there all through the 70s and most mm-hmm. of the 80s.
Most of the 80s.
What's it? How bad is it when you are leaving? Is it dangerous at school? Because you hear the things and the, you know.
Well, you know, like by the time I got to high school, you know, Bloods and Crips were full force. You know, I lived in a red neighborhood, went to school. It was predominantly a blue neighborhood.
Okay.
And so there was some activity on campus, you know, occasionally. But I had other stuff to do. You know, I got involved in speech and debate and had no free time for that.
You just kept busy.
Yeah, got busy.
You feel like that it ever affected you as far as getting bullied, or you got to join a gang, you got to pick a side, you ever getting roughed up?
No, there was no pick a side. I mean, I was a student athlete, you know, I was
football, right?
Yeah, football and wrestling.
Yeah.
And
this is a side note, and this is as much for producer Steven and any of our listeners. Mark and I have known each other 6 years.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. It was right around when I started comedy. Years. And so we've done some stuff, and I knew Mark from a couple things. It was maybe a year ago that I realized Mark is in my favorite all-time commercial. It was a Snickers commercial.
Who are the chefs?
What? Remember the same? Yeah. The Kansas City chefs?
I almost didn't get in it.
What? So let me tell the commercial that I want to hear. So there's a classic Snickers commercial. Right. What year is that? Early 2000s?
Yeah, I don't know. No, it must have been, it was before 2000 because by 2000 I had fallen off of the commercial wagon.
Oh, so you get a nice little.
There was
little
a strike in 2000.
Okay.
And I never really got back into commercials.
Oh, man.
You know, I was commercial king before
Yeah. This particular one was for Snickers, and it was during their not going anywhere for a while.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and so the guy, they're showing him painting the end zone in meticulous detail. You can look this up on YouTube. And then it pans out and it says, you know, Kansas City chefs instead of Chiefs. Yeah. Great idea. And the one guy comes up and says it's wrong. And then the second half is that, I don't know what they call it in commercials, but the last part of the commercial,
tag.
What's your line again?
I don't know. I said a bunch of different things. Yeah, and they played a bunch of different.
I think it's one. It's just like, hey, you know,
you should try my. Because I was coming up, you should try my gumbo. Yeah, you should try my. Yeah, I just did like a list of them because what happened was we were losing the light, and I had worked with these two directors before, and they loved me, so they put me in the spot, and then they would give the guy direction, the old guy. And he would do something totally opposite. Like they tell him, throw your hands up in the air. And he'd flop down on the ground. So the camera is getting ready to pan up to catch him with his hands in the air. And he falls out of frame. And so they were so frustrated. They lose the light. They go, Mark.
What is this guy, just a bad actor? What happened here?
I don't know. He had a great audition.
Yeah.
But just couldn't follow directions.
Yeah.
And they
I feel like
me,
that's, I mean, I don't do any acting, but I feel that's like 90% of what. They tell you to do something, do it.
Exactly.
Right?
Especially commercials, because they're looking for something specific.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, when I the rare chance get into a commercial audition, first thing I do is I give them a take the way I like it. Mm-hmm. And then when I go to the callback and I get a note from the director, I do it exactly the way he asked me for it.
Okay.
Until they ask me to do something.
Right,
different.
Right. So they've seen you do it the way you like, but now, I mean, he's the director. He's on the hook.
Yeah. Well, he's got notes directly from the client.
Right, about what they want.
And
they're paying for this puppy.
Exactly.
So yeah, that's a great commercial. And I remember I saw that because I didn't know you were in it. And I looked it up and I was like, I don't know if I can find that old commercial. And I saw you in the end in your pads. And it was the first, and I was like,
baby face.
Oh, yeah, Mark played football. Like, I remember looking at it, I was like, yeah, A, you're in the commercial. B, I can see it. Yeah. I can see, you know, I can see old Jock MCL, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you look bad now, no, but I could see.
I could probably play if it wasn't for this drop foot.
That drop foot, you'd be making zigs and zags that nobody could predict.
Talking about
yourself
making
included.
Some cuts.
So you said you almost didn't get that commercial, though.
Well, no, I almost didn't get in it because we're losing the light.
Oh, yeah. I see what you mean.
And so and they come up to me and they go, hey, if you just walk up to him and kick him square in the behind, we give you a $1,500 stunt bump. I said, don't ask me for things that you really don't want. And then they said, okay, what we want you to do is we want you to go up and rattle off a bunch of things that he should try.
Right.
You know, say one.
That's fun.
Give it a beat. Say another one. Give it a beat. I did like 30 things.
That's great.
And that was my take.
Yeah.
And then we were out because we lost the light.
Oh, man.
So I'm lucky to be in it. And after it was off the air for over a year, I get a call. Hey, they want to put that thing back on overseas in Ireland or somewhere.
Yeah.
Flat buyout. Bunch of money.
So it's a nice paycheck for
and,
you.
Yeah. And they were like, do you... Are you okay with that? I was like, yeah.
No, thank you.
Yeah.
That's what we call a dumb question.
Right.
So you being a student athlete, you felt like kind of helped kind of stay away and from the riffraff.
Yeah. I mean, every once in a while, you know, you have a run in with somebody.
Yeah.
You know, I remember two occasions. There was one. Don't do this. Don't try this at home, kids. So I would have very little money and go to school. And in the morning, I'd shoot dice in the hallway because the gangsters would be out there shooting dice.
Right.
And I'd win myself $10 or $20 for lunch.
Yeah.
And so this one morning, I'm shooting dice. I'm about $30, $40 in the pot right now. And so I'm cleaning up a little bit. And this guy walks through, stoops down, and grabs the money. And so I slam him against the lockers, and we go at it. And I'm holding him by his ears, slamming his head against the lockers. And one of his ears begins to come off in my hand.
Hey.
Whoa. Apparently it only takes 15 pounds of pressure to pull the ear off.
Noted. Hey, if there's any takeaway from today's episode, get those hands strong so you can rip off an ear.
15 pounds of pressure.
15 pounds of pressure. That's it.
So in my fifth period class, which is my speech class.
Yeah.
He comes to the door with this big, giant gauze. It's like the size of a softball. And he goes, do you walk home? I said, no. He goes, well, walk home today. Go out the back gate. I was like, all right. So I walk out toward the back gate, and there's a crowd, like half the school is following.
Oh, of course.
And, you know, my neighborhood guys are all there.
Oh, yeah. When word gets out about a fight, the whole school.
And so he's standing there in the middle of this this dirt path that people have sort of cut in through the grass because there's a hole in the fence that we go through to get out. So he's standing there. I walk up, don't even say a word. Pop! Right in the face. Drop him. And all the guys in my neighborhood just started stomping him. I just kept walking.
Oh, you're like, I like that you didn't, because I remember in fights a lot of time that pre-fight hype
yeah.
just went on too long.
Yeah, way too long.
A lot of yelling, a lot of shoving.
No,
you just walked up, one punch, we're out.
Was he? There was a kid in my neighborhood, Robin Alexander, who he would say, knock this off my shoulder. And while you were thinking about it, he'd punch you. And so because of that, it trained me to just get that first punch.
Yeah. Just get in, boom, get out.
Yeah.
So you play football all throughout high school.
Mm-hmm.
Did you play in college?
I played at, well, my first semester of college, I came to San Diego State.
Yeah.
Way too small. I was center in high school.
Uh-huh.
And way too small to play it
okay.
here. And so I was on the blue chip squad.
Isn't that funny how that happens? Just one level up.
Yeah.
In high school, they look at you and are like, nah, man, you're a running back.
and that's what it ended up being.
Yeah.
I got here and I ended up being a running back broke my ribs and went back home, went to Cerritos College, played linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
Did three semesters there. We won the Pony Bowl championship that year.
Oh, that's cool.
And then I got a debate scholarship to USC and left Cerritos after three semesters.
I definitely want to hear about that debate stuff because it's not, when you think about, you know, kids coming up in Compton, you're like, nah, Bloods, Crips, nah, debate.
Yeah, yeah. Forensic speaking. Mm.
Real quick before we get there, though, I'm always interested on former football players' take on kind of the state of the whole concussion and, you know, all that. So, because, like, my boy's 11, right? You know,
yeah.
You know, Joel really wants to play, and I'm like, oof. He plays flag,
yeah.
You know, and you just you see the stats, you hear the things, you know, guys. You hear so many ex players saying like they got to minimize hits, don't let them play, or don't let them play till late, you know. And then the other side is saying, you know, it's happening because their form is all wrong. What are your thoughts? It's like if you had a boy who wanted to play, or would you let a kid play? You think they should, or what are your thoughts on the whole matter?
I think you should let a kid be a kid. Hmm. Let a kid have fun. If he wants to play ball, let him play ball. And learn something about the game and about form and all that, because that's what it's all about. Like the first year that I played was the year our school had their first Rydell helmets with the air packs in them.
That was the first year they got them.
That was the first year they got
them.
So
they had the helmet
before
without
that,
the padding.
It was the suspension. The suspension helmet.
Yep.
Looks like the inside of a construction helmet. My brother played with that helmet.
Yeah. You honestly just play without helmets at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, might as well have that leather thing.
Yes,
you know, it was probably safer. I say just, you know, just get involved with you know, your kid playing, and make sure he's doing the right form. Make sure he's got his head up. Make sure he's not, you know, hitting with the crown of his head and not taking those hits.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. And I go back and forth because, you know, it seems, you know, you play the stats
because you
games.
Do all that, and then one day he gets on his skateboard without his helmet
right.
and cracks his head.
That was me, yeah. Yeah, I busted my head open. Not skateboarding, rollerblading.
You know.
Let the record show.
Let a kid be a kid.
Yeah, I like that. And it's one of those things because, yeah, it's such a freak accident thing sometimes.
Yeah, well, like, there was a kid that went to my church. High school football game one night, on the way back to the huddle, he tripped over somebody's foot. Middle of the field, nobody else around, just him and that one guy, trips over the foot, falls on his neck, breaks his neck, paraplegic.
Jeez. Yeah, I hear you. I mean, obviously the odds aren't the same, but you never know. You could have had you could have had a tough match. You could have tripped on the stage going to your debate.
Right. Right.
Lights out.
I did.
That would have been ironic.
I did have one humorous interp round in my high school.
What is that? You say
it was humorous interpretation of literature.
Okay, this is in debate.
I'm doing this funny speech.
Yes.
And
this poor soul high schooler
are dying. People are cracking
you're
up. I got on a suit.
You're going against somebody. Or there's
like six or eight people in a round.
Yeah, no, and somebody has to go on after you. Come on,
and it's finals, and people are dying. And after it was over, My then girlfriend said to me, "Your zipper was down the whole time." Like, I was like, "Man, I thought this speech was killing."
That's the man,
and I still won.
It was all part of it. That's what's made it funny. Isn't that crazy when something like that gets in your head on stage too?
Though? Right.
There's this last week I'm on a show, big show. It's like 2,500, big show.
Mm.
Big old screens on us,
yeah.
You know, the IMAX, high def, the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I'm noticing early, I got the itchy nose, you know, and I was like, all right, I don't, that's kind of annoying, but
right.
I kind of do that as a mannerism on stage anyways, ever since you told me to stop looking at my feet. I'll kind of hit the, I'm not picking it or anything, right. But then I just kind of keep doing it. And I was like, there's something.
Wait till you get
there.
Hairs in there. Wait till you get those gray hairs that. One day you shave it out, and then tomorrow it's an inch long. And you can see it while you're on stage.
Oh, that's a hard pass for me. Thank you. No, so I'm now worried the whole time that I have a booger showing.
And I'm
doing this, and I, at one point, go to take – I'm like, I got to do something extreme just to make sure. So I take a drink of water.
Get water all up in there?
I take a drink of water and get my kind of my lips wet and then put the mic down during one of the laughs. And I just I do like a full elbow to hand. Like just like a rampage. Like
right.
Just make sure
if there's a bird in the sky, yeah. It's dead.
I was like took a machine gun to it. If there's anything there. It is there no more. So, I was talking to somebody about this week, and they go like, "So, like, how do you like think? You know what next joke is coming?" I was like, "Sometimes I'm thinking about it, but sometimes I'm thinking about something else altogether."
Altogether. Yeah. Well, it's like when you get to a point in your act where you don't really have to think about the jokes, and that's when new stuff comes out, and that's when you're like drifting off thinking about something else.
Yeah.
And. That can be a blessing and a curse in that you might be thinking about something else and then you forget where you're going.
Yep. Yeah. And it can get more rigid too. It can be one or the other. You can get real rigid in it or mm-hmm. you can kind of get loose. So you're doing when in high school, is it, what's really the passion? Is it sports or is it debate? Cause I mean, looking at your trajectory, debate to acting, the whole thing, was it both?
It was sports. I thought I was going to go play football somewhere, and I got to San Diego State and realized I'm not big.
I'm too small.
I'm tiny in the scheme of things.
Yeah.
And then when I was at Cerritos College, I played football, and I was on the debate team, and I won the national championship. I was the most outstanding speaker in the nation that year. And
the national championship?
Yeah.
That's insane.
And so USC had their team coaching there. So I had a coach from USC in every round, judging me in every round of every event. And the head of the department was one of my judges in my final round of speech to entertain.
Okay.
And he comes up to me after the award ceremony and hands me his card. He says, "Hey, I want you to come to USC." And I said, "I can't afford to go to USC." And he said, "Did I ask you for any money?"
What a great feeling.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Is that an emotional moment for you?
Right now or then?
Then.
Then it was just like, oh, wow. Because things started, to me, I could see things coming into place. Because I didn't want to go to my high school that I went to. I wanted to go to Southgate High School because they had a better football team.
Yeah.
And my mother didn't want to jump through the hoops to get me in there. She didn't want to, like, find somebody and use their address and all that. And I ended up at Dominguez High School in Compton, and Mrs. Schilling was my English teacher who got me involved in speech and debate and acting.
She just recognized something and said, "You got to do this."
Well, I had a drafting class that I ended up dropping because me and the teacher didn't get along.
Drafting class?
Yeah.
What's draft?
Drafting for like architecture and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
And so she says, "You can take my fifth period class." And I get in there. It's a speech class. She says, "You can't pass the class unless you go to tournaments." And I loved it. And then she got me into a play. You know, and then it was like that was the beginning of it.
So when you're doing all this, how involved and how excited and what are mom's thoughts on it? Because you said it's your mom and two sisters or one sister?
A sister and a brother.
Sister and a brother. Younger?
I'm the baby.
You're the baby.
My sister's
right.
in the middle.
So the two older. Are they, mm-hmm. how close in age?
My sister's 18 months older. My brother was 6 years.
Okay, so a little more distance from the brother, but mm-hmm. sister's there. She's right yeah. there with you. You're in high school yeah. together. Is mom supportive? She engaged? She excited? And she's, or is she just like kind of like my dad was?
She was grinding. My
yeah,
was
that's
grinding.
Exactly my dad. Same thing. You single
know,
parent.
And you know, like it's like she didn't. She was so busy trying to keep food on the table and stuff, and she was tired. And but when I started like winning tournaments and you know being in the paper and stuff like that, then it was like, oh, is that what you're doing?
Yeah.
You know, and then
it takes getting in the paper.
It became a thing. Oh, okay, so he's doing something else, and like even now, it's like she'll call me. She goes, "Hey, are you on this show where you're like a cop?" Or I said, "Yeah, I did an episode of the show," and she goes, "Oh, because so-and-so called, and they said you." I said, "I don't know what he's doing. He's, you know, he's an actor. That's what he does."
Yeah. Is she still grinding, or what is she
She's
doing?
Retired.
Okay, where's she
she's
at?
She's retired. She's in the house I grew up in. She won't leave.
Yo, I'm still in Compton.
It's like, she's all my friends are here. No, they're not! Nobody's there!
It's just you, Mama. It's just you.
And she actually said to me yesterday that she's thinking about moving.
Okay.
She's thinking about maybe moving somewhere.
How old is she?
79 years old.
79 years old. Mm-hmm. Would you want her to come down here, or do you like?
I'd love it if she was down here.
Yeah, you're still close to her.
I'd be fatter.
Because she's such a good cook.
Oh, man.
Do you feel like you're closer to your mom now because she's more available as far as time goes?
You know, it's funny because when she first retired, it was hard to catch her. Because she when she left Douglas, she started working for a doctor. She worked for a doctor for 26 years.
Okay.
And at least I could call her and catch her at work. Mm. And then when she first retired, those first few years, it was hard to catch her, man. It's like, I was like, at least when you were at work, I could catch you at work. It's like, where are you? And she would go, she'd call me, leave a message. I have my cell phone, call me back. And then she'd turn it off and put it in her purse.
I remember saying that to my dad when he first retired too. I was like, why do you have a cell phone?
Right.
What's the point of this? You never answer it when I call.
Right.
Not one time. Not one time.
It's not on.
He was like a teenager before he had him. Like, I would call him, and then he would text me back. I was like, just answer the phone.
Yeah, she don't text.
No, she didn't text. She never got to that.
There's no text, and she's like, I don't know how to do all that.
I think the main reason my dad moved in with us is so he could have me around for tech support.
Oh, hilarious.
I think he sensed that tech had reached a set. He's like, okay, I can't. Those Bluetooth speakers look great, but I can't figure that out. I'm going to move in with my son and his family. And now Joel can just be the tech support because he's 11 and he's surpassed me.
Wow.
Which is a gift.
Oh, yeah.
It's an unbelievable gift. Joel, go do that. Joel, hey, figure that out. Joel, hey, go make sure that's on DVR. Joel, oh, what a gift. So, okay, let's catch up on the story. So you, USC, you're on you get the scholarship, which is... Mm-hmm. Is that, that's like a dream story. You hear this kid raised by single mom, blue collar, hustling, gets a not just a scholarship to anywhere, but to USC,
mm-hmm.
no less. It would like, it sounds like it wasn't even in your mind that USC was
no,
a possibility.
No, that wasn't even, it's like I was thinking I'd leave, you know, Cerritos College and go to New Mexico State or somewhere, you know what I mean? It's
yeah.
like, I wasn't thinking USC.
Yeah.
And even though I had great grades, I knew I couldn't afford it.
Yeah, everybody has great grades at USC.
Right.
Or they're really good at something.
Or they have really rich parents.
Yeah, true that. Yeah. So tell me about those years. This is when you're really... Were you acting in high school too?
I did one play in high school.
Okay.
I did... I played the learned professor in Bus Stop.
Okay.
And we took the play. We didn't even have a theater. We had a double classroom that we used as a theater.
Mm-hmm.
And we took the play to the Literary Olympiad, Compton Unified School District. All the schools in the district participated. And I was best actor in Compton Unified School District.
Beautiful.
And so that was
it. Just took right away.
Just winning championships left and right.
Well, you know, that's a gangsta son.
Theater and debate.
Gangsta theater son. Hootie hoo, oh, for the music fire.
I feel like they should do a sequel to Straight Outta Compton. But it's like... Straight from Compton, yeah. Like that. It's like grammatically correct, grammatically correct,
right.
grammatically correct. The straight
Compton, comma, from whence I came.
Yeah.
From whence I came.
And it's the MCL story. Like, hey, man, we were in the same neighborhood at the same time. We were just doing different things.
Somebody's writing that right now, by the way.
What's that?
The MCL story.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, tell me about that.
I don't find my life that interesting.
Yeah, well.
I think,
do you think that's because, kind of like I said, though, like, when you live it, you just, that's all you know.
Yeah, and it's just not fascinating to me.
Yeah.
You know,
it's fascinating to every other human alive.
You know, I don't know. It's like I look at it and I go, well, everybody in my neighborhood lived the same thing except for, you know, we went different paths.
Yeah, yeah. I feel the same thing, too, because people will hear my story, which was different but had its own troubles and hardships.
Yeah.
And people go, oh, my gosh, that's so hard. I don't know how he went through that. And I go, I don't know. It's just... You got up and you went to school.
Yeah,
you ate. You found the food. You did your thing.
Right.
It's one step, one day at a time. You know, and when you reflect on it, I think that sometimes suffering and hardship is much harder as an adult because you comprehend everything that's happening. You understand betrayal. You understand hurt.
Exactly.
You understand unfairness and injustice and those type of things. But as a kid, you're just like, man, I got to get those Nikes.
and some now laters.
Nikes and now and laters is the life of a child.
Also, you know, when you're growing up, you know, mom or dad are going to take care of it.
Mm.
You know, as an adult, it's like, how am I going to take care of it?
Yeah.
You know, but when I look back,
it's like the difference between being a renter and an owner.
Yeah.
When you rent and something breaks, you're like, yeah, landlord's got that.
Call the guy.
Owner, you're like, no, that's my toilet. Yeah, I own that toilet.
Yeah. When I look back, it's like I look at, you know, all these things where I was trying to do something. Like I was trying to go to that other high school, and then I ended up where I went. And because of that, I met Mrs. Schilling, who got me involved in speech and debate. And ended up at USC and ended up acting. And every time I try to do something else, it's like that door closes. And then here's another acting gig. And so I've been acting for 32 years now.
Yeah.
You know.
It's crazy.
And it's like, and I look at it and I go, I don't have a spectacular career to me. But then when you look at all the stuff I've done, it's like, I've done a lot of stuff. You know, I can retire next year.
I bet you're not gonna.
I may take my pension early.
I bet you're still going to tell jokes, is what I mean.
Even as an actor, I mean, you can, even if you take your pension early, you can still act.
Yeah.
You just don't get a check that week.
Oh, I wanted to think about that. So you, because stand up, you're acting and you're doing stand up comes after acting, right?
Yeah, acting is my career. Stand up was kind of like the way I always looked at it, was like my day job.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. Tell me about the audition for Mitzi again at the Comedy Store in LA.
So
for those of you who don't know, Mitzi was the founder and longtime runner of the Comedy Store in LA, and then they started the one down here in San Diego in La Jolla. And, you know, for years, she was pretty hands-on with the talent.
Very.
You know, she famously told Marc Maron to wear a scarf. You auditioned in front of her.
So she had this assistant who saw me do a set in the original room.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, oh, man, Mitzi's got to see you.
What year is this?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Probably 90.
Okay.
89.
Yeah.
Somewhere in there. And... So he sets up date and time. I go. Robin Williams comes in and does a set and just destroys the room, like three people ahead of me. And then the next two guys are just filthy, just F-bombs. And Mitzi is sitting there between the next two guys before me. And she at one point gets up and walks out. And I was like, oh, she's not even going to watch me.
No, she's not even going to be in here.
So I get called on stage. She's not there. I do my set, and apparently at some point she comes back in. I destroy. I get a standing O. I go upstairs.
On a showcase. You get a standing O on a showcase.
I go upstairs to the belly room.
Mm-hmm.
Do another set. Same thing. He goes, call me tomorrow. I call him up. He says, yeah, Mitzi, she saw both your sets. She saw the standing O. She said, you were great. He said, you remind her of Sinbad. Maybe you should get a puppet or something. I stopped going to the Comedy Store. Man. I was like, I'm not going back over there. I don't want to go. I don't want a puppet.
This is the most arbitrary feedback ever. Maybe you should get a puppet.
Hmm. Reminds me of Sinbad.
Our guy George here at the Comedy Palace. He's the only booker that I've really seen kind of give advice or one thing. You know, I have a funny story with George. So I do a joke about dog owners, you know, and the inconsistency. Goulden. It's about Goulden. Oh, yeah. I met at your show. I'm not going to do the whole bit, but right. The idea is that, you know, someone who thinks dogs are more important than kids, and it ends, you know, saying your dog is going to die way before my kids. It gets a little mean and dark at the end, but it usually does well. Mm-hmm. George comes up to me afterwards. You can't tell that joke. The people hated that joke. They loved the joke. They hated that joke. You can't tell it. It's too mean with the dog. You know, George isn't speaking complete sentences.
Yes.
You can't know with the dog. No. I'm there a week later. I close with that. And he comes up and he hugs me. The dog joke, it's the best joke you've ever told. It's so funny. It's just like, honestly, bookers, just if we're getting laughs,
Just let us
get laughs. Let us speak in the currency of laughs.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious. So you've had this career. You've worked hard. And in many ways, you've kind of been like a version of your mom, and that you've grinded and you've worked and you've been doing stand-up and you've traveled and you've worked the road and you do on this thing. But like a show business of that, obviously making more money than your mom was. Do you, because personally being raised mostly by a single parent, but like how are things with mom now? How do you reflect kind of like on that relationship as the family unit growing up now, and your relationships with your siblings too?
Well, back then, it's like, my brother passed in 2005.
Okay.
He was working in a car, the jack slipped and suffocated him.
Oh my gosh, that's awful.
It was terrible. And even now, it's like my mom, holidays and birthdays, you know, it's bad.
Yeah.
And so...
that was the oldest son, the first boy.
Yeah. And... my mom, you know, like I said before, it's like, you know, she took care of everything. So now that she's older, she's 79, it's like all of a sudden she doesn't know how to do stuff.
Hmm.
You know, like the phone, for example, you know, the computer. I don't know nothing about that computer. But when she was working, she's working on a computer every day.
Yeah.
I think she just like, when she stopped working, she's like, I'm not ever doing that again.
Yeah, I'm good.
And so it's like watching her now, it's becoming this situation where it feels like a little bit of parenting.
Hmm.
You know, just because it's like she's seeming vulnerable to me now.
Right.
You know what I mean? Whereas back then she was invincible.
Yeah.
She's larger than life.
You're seeing the humanity a little more.
Yeah. And I remember at her birthday party this year, I remember standing there with her and I could see the top of her head. I was like, wait a minute. I can see the top of my mom's head. She's shrinking.
Mom's going the wrong way.
Right.
Wrong direction.
Yeah, she's literally getting smaller, you know, and as I watch it, it's like I'm, you know, having conversations with my sister about her and about, you know, things that are going on with her. And clearly I'm having concern, you know, as I see other friends' parents pass. You know, my father passed a few years ago. And that didn't affect me as much as if my mom passed.
Sure.
It's going to be brutal. You know, it's like I don't even know how to prepare for that.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm kind of looking at it now. It's like every opportunity I get, you know, I make sure I tell her I love her. Because we weren't touchy-feely as a kid.
Yeah, but it's there more now.
And then when my brother passed, all of a sudden, you know, we all hug, kiss each other. And I love you. Every phone call, you know.
Yeah, tragedy will do that.
Yeah.
Well, you're a good son. You're a good friend. I appreciate you. You're a good guest. I appreciate you doing this, Mark.
Thanks, man.
All right. Bye-bye.
It's fun.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody. If you have not done so already, please rate and subscribe. Follow us on all the social medias and share with all of your friends. Also, if you want to shoot us a note, you can email us at don'tmakemecomebackthere@gmail.com. Also, if you enjoyed this episode and you have not done so already, please go back and listen to all the episodes we've done before. Thanks so much, everybody.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.